I have previously talked about the importance of recognizing dynamic ST-T wave changes in patients suspected of having acute coronary disease, because if ECG changes evolve in a way that corresponds to the coming and going of chest pain symptoms, this is important information that tells us there is an active ongoing process and that prompt cath with acute reperfusion is likely to be needed. The problem is that the culprit artery may spontaneously open and close more than just once during its process of arriving at a final result, so that even if ST elevation resolves in association with resolution of chest pain, spontaneously reopening of the vessel may just as easily spontaneously close again, and this time perhaps without spontaneous reopening. Evolving ECG changes are easy to interpret when the changes are marked, as when multiple leads show obvious ST elevation and reciprocal ST depression. But when the ECG changes are subtle, it may be exceedingly difficult to distinguish between small but real ST segment and T-wave changes that are due to evolving infarction versus ST and T-wave changes that result from other non-cardiac factors, such as a change in patient position, a shift in frontal plane axis, or slight alteration in chest lead electrode placement. Let's address these three other factors one by one. When was the last time you saw the angle of the patient's bed recorded on an ECG? For example, have you ever seen notation on an ECG that the patient was too short of breath to lie flat, so the ECG was recorded at a bed angle of 20 or so degrees? Have you ever seen Q waves on an ECG that you thought were significant in the inferior leads, only to have them come and go on serial tracings during that patient's hospital stay? These questions are relevant because acutely ill patients, especially those with heart failure, may not be able to lie flat for that initial ECG. And it has been shown that Q waves, as well as ST segment and T wave changes, may be affected by a change in position of the patient's bed. But since in the vast majority of cases, this information is never recorded, we have no way of knowing if a change in bed position might be at least partially responsible for some of the ECG changes between one tracing and the next. So, when we compare serial ECGs looking for subtle differences in the shape and amount of ST segment elevation and depression, we have to distinguish between differences from one ECG to the next that are likely to be due to a worsening or improvement in the patient's coronary disease, versus ECG changes that are likely to be the result of technical factors. This is why I go lead to lead when I compare serial tracings, holding both tracings right next to each other, because if the QRS complex is predominantly positive in lead 3 or in lead AVF on that first tracing, but then becomes more negative than positive on the second tracing, then the frontal plane axis has shifted, and we are no longer comparing apples with apples, but instead apples with oranges or with tangerines. A change in frontal plane axis can clearly change the appearance of Q waves, as well as the shape and amount of ST segment elevation or depression. It may not be easy to determine if such ECG changes are due to cardiac factors or technical factors, but the first step in the process is to recognize that the axis has shifted, and in my experience, this first step is all too often overlooked. The same is true for placement of chest lead electrodes, especially when a different technician has recorded the subsequent tracing. Now, the chances are that if you do serial tracings no more than a few minutes apart in the emergency department, that the same technician will have recorded all of these tracings. But that's not true if we are comparing a patient's baseline tracing that was done at some time in the past with a pre-hospital ECG, and then with that initial emergency department ECG, and then that next ECG done right after the patient is transferred to a medical floor. And even though we all were taught the specific anatomic landmarks for chest lead position for each of the six precordial leads, accurate electrode lead placement simply does not reliably occur under real-life circumstances, even when experienced technicians are the ones recording the ECG. We became aware of the disappointingly large amount of variability in chest lead placement by informal review of pictures from the internet that supposedly were showing correct lead placement, but for which faulty lead placement was obvious in over one-third of cases. Now, if this much variability exists in chess lead placement on these internet examples supposedly chosen to illustrate correct technique, we can only imagine how prevalent faulty chess lead placement must be in general practice. But you've already seen this multiple times, if you have looked for it. How often have you noted a difference in R-way progression from one tracing to the next that made you wonder whether you were seeing a real change in R-way progression or a change in technique brought about by a different technician using different anatomic landmarks? This problem is especially prevalent with placement of the first two precordial chess leads, leads V1 and V2, that all too often are recorded in the second or third intercostal space instead of in the fourth intercostal space as they are supposed to be. Three quick things to look for when you suspect leads V1 and V2 may have been placed too high on the chest. Are P waves predominantly negative in leads V1 and V2? Is there an RSR prime complex in leads V1 and V2? And does the QRST complex in leads V1 and V2 look very similar to the QRST complex in lead AVR? If the answer to at least two of these questions is yes, then it's likely that leads V1 and V2 have not been correctly placed, and this can clearly affect our assessment for ECG changes of anterior infarction. This is why I sometimes request that a marker on the patient's chest be used to ensure consistency in chest lead electrode placement on serial tracings. Finally, I suggest that you lower your threshold for requesting that an ECG be repeated. I find nothing more frustrating than trying to decide what the ST segment is doing when the baseline is moving up and down, or when artifact alters the QRS complex and ST-T waves in a way that each of the two or three beats in a given lead look significantly different from each other. Which of the three complexes in a given lead is the one that truly represents what is going on? Rather than waiting hours until the next ordered tracing is done, repeat the ECG immediately, because the ECG you are looking at is technically inadequate to give you an answer. I will emphasize that most of the time it will not be necessary to immediately repeat ECGs, but it is necessary to do so when ECG changes are subtle and technical mishaps prevent accurate interpretation.